Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 58. I'm recording it on Wednesday, December 10th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Evolution, Environmentalism, and Other Investing Topics. The idea for this one came up some time ago when I was posting on the Financial Webring forum. And that's another one of those forums that I've been banned from because I reported accurately what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates, the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, the studies that most of us use to plan our retirements are analytically invalid. And I happen to be the person who discovered that. I committed the terrible crime of reporting what I had learned on a discussion board and managed to get thousands of fellow community members interested in the topic. And that's led to six and a half year smear campaign against me and all others, all of those who have expressed interest in exploring the realities of stock investing at the various retire early and indexing discussion board communities in the time since. And one of the boards I visited during that time is the Financial Webring Forum. It's owned by passive investors. So it has a strong passive investing tilt. They bill themselves as more or less the Canadian equivalent of the Bogleheads.org board. They call themselves do it yourself investors. So the idea is to teach people how to manage their own investing rather than go to paid financial advisors. But they do this through, you know, recommending passive investing. And of course, all that goes with Bogle's thinking. And if you've listened to earlier podcasts, I am a big supporter of John Bogle. I'm a major Boglehead. I consider John Bogle one of the three godfathers, along with Warren Buffett and Robert Shiller, one of the three godfathers of the rational investing model, which is the model I advocate. But I very, very, very strongly dissent from Bogle's advocacy of passive investing, which I think is a disaster. And so this board became very upset as have some others. Of course, it's not the entire community. The majority of all these communities love hearing about the realities of stock investing. 70% to 80% of these board communities very much want to hear the realities, but there's a group of extremely dogmatic passive investing enthusiasts who simply cannot tolerate any discussion of what the historical data says about the effect of valuations on long-term returns. So anyway, with that preface, at one point during these discussions, there were about three fellows there who were particularly abusive, and I don't know if they were all owners, or if they weren't owners, they were big shots. They were in with the owners. You know, the way they used to describe it to me is, so and so has juice. You know, you better watch your step. This guy's got juice. And I just go ahead and answer the questions to the best of my ability, regardless of what juice any particular poster happens to possess. But I don't even recall the fellow's name at this time. But he had juice, and he didn't like it that I questioned passive investing. And at one point, he made an argument that I elected at the time not to engage in. I just ignored it, and I'll tell you. And this is the evolution argument. At one point, he said, "See, what goes on with passive investing is the claim that is put forward by these dogmatic passive investing enthusiasts is that passive investing is science. They don't say that it's their personal opinion that passive investing, just to, so you'll understand the background, passive investing is the dominant model of stock investing today. It says that, it essentially says that valuations don't matter. You won't get them to say that. If you ask a passive investing enthusiast, do valuations matter? They will answer yes. But if you ask them, how much should we change our stock allocations when valuations get to insanely high levels, they'll say not at all, not at all. Always stick with the same stock allocation. So passive investing enthusiasts are a walking contradiction. They acknowledge that valuations affect long-term returns, but they say we should not take any practical action in response to that knowledge. And of course, that's what's behind the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. These studies do not include an adjustment for the valuation level that applies on the date the retirement begins. And obviously, you can't get the numbers right unless you include that. So I don't recall what the original discussion was about. It was something relating to valuations, I'm sure, because those are the only threads in which I participate. But so at one point, this claim was being made that passive investing is a science, and I said, well, it's not a science. I said it has the trappings of science. There's academic research that supports the efficient market theory, which is the emotional framework for the passive investing model. But there's also, most of that research came out in the 1960s, 1970s, and it still comes out today. But there's academic research from 1980 forward showing just the opposite, showing that valuations do affect long-term returns, that long-term timing of the market is possible, that the passive investing model does not stand up to scrutiny. So there's quote-unquote science on both sides of the question. This is certainly not a... It would be fair to say that there is scientific evidence supporting passive investing. That's fair to say. But it is certainly not fair to say that the question is closed, that we have, you know, all scientific study shows that passive investing works, that nothing could be farther from the truth. And so what happens in all of these discussions is, what I believe is going on is that some of these people who consider themselves experts, and this fellow who was making the argument, he may have actually been somebody who charges people for investing advice. I don't know that for a fact, but I recall one time seeing a website where the guy had the same name as the guy as one of these people who posted on this board, one of the abusive ones. And I don't know even if that's the same person or, you know, whatever. I just don't know. But it may be that that's the case. But these guys, these dogmatists, they get this idea in their head that, you know, they know all the answers and they're going to tell everyone else. And they're not giving their opinions. They say, well, others can give their opinions, but I don't give opinion. I say it as it is. What I say is truth with a capital T and may not be challenged. Taylor Larimore did this just recently at the bogleheads.org board. Someone said, given the stock crash, maybe we should open this board up a little bit to other ideas. And Taylor said, no, we don't need to do that. We have the academic research. What we say is science. What we say is right. There is no question. This is settled. And this is, you know, Rob Bennett says, no, that's false. And dangerous, of course. Irresponsible. Because there's so much evidence pointing the other way. I find the evidence pointing the other way to be overwhelming. So this fellow was making his claim that passive investing is science, and I was saying no. And there's many different ways you can attack the this is science claim. There's historical data showing that it doesn't work. There's expert opinion in which some of the biggest name experts in the field have pointed out that valuations affect long-term returns. There's the behavior of the dogmatist. Obviously, you know, they wouldn't behave in the way they do if they had confidence in their claims. But the particular argument that I find most convincing of all is common sense. Common sense tells us that stocks cannot possibly offer the same value proposition when they are insanely overpriced as they do when they are priced reasonably. I this to me is so obvious. It's I don't know how anything could be more clear. There's no asset on planet Earth that you can buy that you can't at some point pay too much for. You know, you can, if you found the perfect car in every way, and the market price is $20,000, you might say, well, I love that car so much, I would pay $30,000 for it. But you wouldn't pay $100,000. There's always some limit to how much you would pay for something, you know, there's always some point at which the value proposition is just not there. And passive investing enthusiasts argue that that's not so with stocks, that there's no price level at which stocks are a bad purchase. And I reject that. Not even because the historical data shows it's not true. The historical data does show that. But I reject it just on grounds of common sense. And so I was making that point. Common sense argues against passive investing. And this is a very important point because I'll mention again something I've mentioned on a few recent podcasts. There was a there's an economist, Brad DeLong. He has a very popular blog, and he recently wrote a note dealing with this issue, and it dealt with Robert Shiller's research, which dates back to 1981, showing that valuations affect long-term returns, that long-term timing of the market is indeed possible. And, you know, Brad DeLong said, well, when this research came out, some people might have discounted it. They might have thought it was data mining. I won't go into what that is. But now the evidence is much stronger because it's been, you know, almost 30 years we've had this research, and it has worked out of sample. It has worked on a going forward basis, not only a going back basis. And that's an important note. I think it's very important that Brad DeLong put that out. But there's one part of it that rubs me the wrong way. He says, some people might have thought in earlier days that Shiller's research was junk science. You know, if it was data mining, it might have been called junk science. Well, I am all for skepticism about academic research. So if that's the point, I agree. But what I don't agree with is we have to do something with our money. We have to choose. You can't, you know, passive investing and Shiller's research are opposite paths. Passive investing says valuations don't matter at all, implicitly at least. Shiller's research says valuations are critical. You know, at the valuation levels that applied from 1995 through the first part of 2008, stocks were a horrible long-term value proposition. And at reasonable price levels, they're a wonderful long-term value proposition. So valuations are the whole ballgame under Shiller and under all, you know, all that follow the rational investing model. And valuations are meaningless in the passive investing mode. They really don't make any difference at all because you can talk about them, but you're always going to stick to the same stock allocation. So it really makes no difference what the valuation level is. So these two approaches are opposites. Rational investing, that's the approach that considers valuations, and passive investing, the approach that ignores valuations. So, you know, what I don't like about what Brad DeLong said in saying that Shiller's research might have been junk science, I think it's healthy if people were skeptical of Shiller's research. And even today, even though the proof is stronger, I think skepticism continues to be a healthy thing. But what I don't get is, say that you're skeptical of Shiller's research, are you going to follow passive investing? Are you going to say passive investing is not junk science? Passive investing was never proven. Passive investing is all based on data mined studies, just as Shiller's was. The only difference is that Shiller's has tested out of sample, whereas the passive investing research never tested out of sample. So, you know, I don't think we should buy into either as an orthodoxy. I don't, you know, I think Robert Shiller is wonderful, but I wouldn't say that he's God. I wouldn't say I'm a dogmatic Shillerite. I would say I find him persuasive. I find his evidence very strong, whereas I find the case for passive investing extremely weak, extremely lame. I think it's all just emotional. I think people want to believe that valuations don't matter, and so they persuade themselves that this is so, and they ignore the obvious holes in the research. They just close their eyes to it. So I think the case there is very weak. But even if I thought it was strong, you know, and some people obviously do, I don't think they should ever become dogmatic about it. And of course, the problem in the real world is you have to choose one path or the other. So if you're going to dismiss Shiller as junk science, Brad DeLong is not saying we should do that today. He's saying that that might have been reasonable 20, 30 years ago, but not today. But if even 20, 30 years ago, I don't think we should have dismissed it because there was no alternate approach that had science behind it. All right. This guy at the Financial Webbing Forum, you know, brought up this claim that passive investing is science. And I said, no, I said, it's not. I said, at one point I stated it a little strongly. I said, it's just a notion that passed through some people's heads. And I sort of took that back. I said, well, maybe that's saying it too strongly. I said, you know, this was good research. It certainly was a step forward. We learned things from Eugene Fama and all the others that put forward the research on the efficient market theory. We know a lot of things about investing that we otherwise would not have known. But the part I have a problem with is this dogmatism, this idea that investing is that passive investing is science. And he brought up a comparison. He said, "This reminds me of people who question evolution." And I, you know, I didn't know how to react to that. I said, "Holy moly!" You know, now you know I'm not controversial enough. I've said that the retirement studies we've been using for 30 years get the numbers wrong, that there are going to be millions of busted retirements, that Bogle is wrong about passive investing, and I've been banned from, I don't know, 6, 8 different discussion boards, and now I'm going to take on evolution on top of it. I was like, no thanks. But I did find a curious parallel. I don't think his comparison was totally nuts. He probably put it forward. I shouldn't say what he did. I don't know what was in his mind. He probably put it forward out of frustration. Probably that's what really was going on. I think the guy believes what he believes. He believes passive investing, you know, heart, mind, and soul. And it's driving him nuts that there's this guy out there saying no. It's not science. It's just emotion. You know, there's certain words I use that I think set these people off, and I don't do it. It's not right to say that I do it just for the purpose of setting them off, but I am aware that it sets them off. It's not that I'm so naive that I don't grasp that. I believe they need to learn to cope with it. They need to get their emotions under control, and we all need to state things as strongly as we believe them. Otherwise, the discussions will never be fair and balanced and fruitful. So I do say things like, I'll say passive investing is 100% emotional. And I believe that. I believe that the only reason anyone has ever believed that valuations don't affect long-term returns is because they don't want to believe it. I am not able to think of any rational case that can be made for that argument. And if you believe that valuations affect long-term returns, the safe withdrawal rate cannot be the same number, at different valuation levels, cannot be. So, anyway, this guy brought up the evolution thing. And as I say, I was intrigued by it because on the one hand, I didn't want to go there because it's obviously a politically, explosive issue. And I don't like to get investing discussions involved in politics because I've seen too many good discussion boards in the personal finance area destroyed by people getting into political discussions. And one thing I will say that I think Mel Lindauer does right over at the bogleheads.org is they don't allow political discussions. And I think they're smart. And there are people who have criticized them for it. I think they're smart. The Motley Fool board, the retire early board there, was destroyed because of abusive posting. But a big secondary factor is that as the abusive posting drove away the people who cared about the subject of early retirement, more and more people came to that board interested in politics because the board had grown to a large board, so you had a big audience, and nobody was talking about early retirement anymore because the abusive posters had put the fear of God in them, and they turned to politics, and it destroyed the board. And so I have a bad feeling about that. So, my inclination, I always post on topic when I post to boards. I don't ever get into politics. I don't get into any off-topic stuff. I mean, song lyrics, if you call that off-topic. But when I talk about song lyrics, it's always within a post dealing with an investing topic. There's always a moral that has to do with investing or saving. I also post about saving. But I don't go off-topic. I just don't do it. But that said, I am what I love, of course, my niche, within my investing work, is looking at aspects of the investing project that have not been discussed by others. I tend to stay away from all the intellectual stuff, the numbers, the charts, the tables, and I do a little bit of that when I have to do it. But my focus is on humanizing the discussion of investing. So I like to talk about song lyrics. I like to talk about movies. I like to talk about day-to-day life. I like to talk about, emotions, fears, hopes, dreams, how that sort of thing affects our investing decisions. So they call it the soft side. You know, I deal with the soft side of investing as opposed to the hard side. I think the soft side is the most important side. So there's a sense in which the soft side really is the hard side. But whatever your belief on that, that's where I tend to focus. I focus on interpersonal reactions, and I focus on how we learn about investing. That's a big one to me. How do we learn what we believe about investing? People don't talk about that much, and I think we need to talk about it a lot more. I think we could avoid these massive price crashes if we had a better understanding of why it is that we come to believe certain things about investing, and of course our beliefs are what cause these massive bull markets, which are what cause massive bear markets. The price crash is the result of the bull market of the 1990s, and the bull market of the 1990s is the result of the popularity of passive investing. It's all a chain. And so you can trace this economic crisis we're living through today to Eugene Fama coming out with his study in the 1960s on the efficient market. It just, you know, it's sort of a delayed reaction. It's taken years for that idea to sweep through the academic world, and then for, you know, Bogle to pick it up and for him to create all these mutual funds based on this concept, the efficient market theory, and then for books to be written like Stocks for the Long Run and A Random Walk Down Wall Street and Common Sense on Mutual Funds, and you get to this point where it all explodes in a massive bull market, a massive out-of-control, insane bull market, and that, of course, sets the stage for a massive loss of middle-class wealth somewhere down the road, which we're living through today. So if we're going to change this, we need to get to the root. We need to get to, why is it we fall for this passive investing idea? It's, you know, that idea under different names is what has always caused massive price crashes. The idea that valuations don't matter. Why do we keep falling for it? You know, with all the history we have of how damaging this idea is, why do we keep falling for it? So when you talk about evolution and investing, you're bringing in an aspect of, you're at least opening the door to a discussion of investing that is out of the norm, that allows us to attack the investing problem from a different direction. And I like that. So I was tempted to respond, but, you know, I every now and then I'm a little bit prudent, you know, despite what people say about me. And I said, no, you know, there's too much heat, there's too much anger, too much hate on the part of these passive investing dogmatists. I'm going to take a pass. And then later, at the Goon Central Board, this is a board that is set up solely for abusive posting on investing issues. And, you know, it's run by John Graney. And he has people from this board go, you know, if ever I post on a blog, they go over there and try to destroy the blog, you know, try to threaten the people running the blog that will destroy your site if you allow honest posting on safe withdrawal rates or any of these valuation-related topics. And over there, I post over there, you know, for various reasons, largely because I want to understand the goon mindset better than I do today. I feel that this is the root of all our troubles. It's you know, I think we all have goonishness within us. We all have it within us. Most of us obviously don't go to the extremes that the John Graney people do. But we all have it. We all have it. That's why we do this to ourselves. This is why we cause ourselves such misery, such financial losses over and over and over again. Because we have, you know, sin is a hatred of self. Goonishness is sin. It's a hatred of others as well, of course. You know, sin hurts others. It also hurts ourselves. I believe that. And goonishness is just a form of sin. It's just a different word for the same thing. So why, you know, I want to understand how is it that people come to believe things in investing that do them such harm? And so I do communicate with these people, and they brought up they picked up on this evolution thing. And you know, sometime after it was brought up at the Financial Webbring Forum, they brought it up at the Goon Central Board. And again, I took a pass. I said, no, you know, I'm not going to get into it. But it's always been in the back of my mind. Should I address the evolution issue? And what happened finally is there's a guy, Ben Stein. Most people know him from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the movie. He plays the teacher in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But Ben Stein's done all sorts of things. And Ben Stein, amazingly enough, he's a guy now that has got involved in projects relating to two things, these two subjects that I'm involved in, safe withdrawal rates and the effect evaluations on long-term returns. Ben Stein wrote a book called Yes, You Can Time the Market, addressing, you know, my favorite topic, addressing rational investing. And Ben Stein did a movie. I think it came out last year. I recently watched it on video. On evolution. It's really on intelligent design, which is sort of a branch of the evolution debate. And it's called Expelled. It's a documentary about teachers who have been removed from university settings because they teach or they advocate or even discuss. In some cases they didn't even advocate it. They just discussed the intelligent design concept. So Ben Stein, you know, tied these two issues, and I took that as a sign, you know, that I was meant to actually address the evolution question. So one of the things I loved about Ben Stein, his book, is that I loved the introduction better than the material. The material was fine. You know, he gave ideas on how to time the market that stand up to a research test. But I love the introduction because in the introduction, he doesn't give any long, convoluted reasons why he thinks you can time the market. He says, it's common sense. How could you not be able to time the market in a long-term sense? And I just love that because that's, if there's one pet peeve I have, that's it. That people all the time are asking, you know, they question. We have all this data showing you can time the market, but people say, oh, is it peer-reviewed? And is it this? And is it that? And I say, why ask all these questions? Does it make sense to you? Are you even able to imagine a world in which timing wouldn't work? If you can't even imagine a world in which it wouldn't work, why would you believe people who say it doesn't work? To me, you have to pass the common sense test before you get to the next stage. You know, first is common sense. Then, if somebody puts forward an idea and they can come up with a common sense rationale, then you say, okay, present your evidence. Let's see what data you've got. But if you can't get past the common sense hurdle, I don't even want to look at the data, really. You know, I might look at it, but I'm going to look at it with a jaundiced eye because it's hard for me to buy. If you had all the data in the world and the thing you were claiming didn't make sense, didn't pass the common sense test, I would not be willing to put my retirement money down on it. And that's where passive investing stands. It's an idea that does not make sense. The idea that valuations don't affect long-term returns just doesn't stand up to any scrutiny whatsoever. I don't care if you've got 500 studies showing it. And of course, the truth is there are many studies showing the opposite. But there are studies that support passive investing. Please don't say that I have said otherwise. There are studies that support passive investing. And they've got peer review. You know, they've got peer review. So Ben Stein, you know, he's got my respect on the timing issue. And he discusses and he explores this question of the movie, as I say, really, it's not quite evolution, but intelligent design is, it's clearly part of the evolution controversy. You know, intelligent design, the idea there is that scientists look at how complex the universe is. And they say, given the level of complexity, it's not possible that this was all just random. In other words, we've gone through different stages as a people. There was a time when we believed God. You know, the natural thing is you look around you and you say, well, somebody, where did this all come from? Had to come from somewhere. So in the days, let's say, pre-science, there were, you know, I don't know if there was ever a day pre-science. There was always some minimal form of science, but in the days pre-science, people believed in God. They said, well, God put this all here. And, you know, there's a long story with that, which I won't get into, but obviously we had different forms of God and all this sort of thing. And then we got into the scientific era, and now the scientists, a lot of them, many scientists believe in God, of course, but many do not. Many very strongly do not believe in God. And they say, well, no, there is no God. We didn't need to have a God here to put all these things here. They came about through evolution, you know, and you know the whole evolution story. I'm not going to go through it. But they essentially random, through a random process. You know, there are mutations and then the mutations are beneficial in some way. They call, you know, survival of the fittest comes into play, and the mutations, you know, become the standard over time. And so we evolve from one form into another. And this has caused, it's certainly been a contributing factor in many people having less faith in God. It has not wiped out faith. There are many people that still believe in God. But there are, you know, there always have been people who didn't believe in God. But there probably are more today who don't believe in God than there were at earlier times. And I don't think evolution is the only reason for that, but it is a contributing factor. I think just about everybody would agree with that. So what this guy on the Financial Webbring forum was saying is that he was basically saying, look, I've been on boards where people question evolution and they're annoying because evolution is proven. You know, it's proven beyond any doubt whatsoever. And these people are questioning it and they're saying it doesn't meet a common sense test and you're just like them. You know, that's what he was saying. And, except you're doing it in regard to passive investing. So he was saying passive investing equals evolution. Rational investing equals intelligent design. And, you know, I don't think the analogy holds up entirely, but I do see a parallel there. You know, I don't think the guy's totally off his rocker. I believe in God. My faith is not what I would like it to be. I would like to have a stronger faith, but I believe in God. If you ask me to check a box, you know, you believe in God, you don't believe in God, I definitely check I believe in God, and I work on it. I try to believe in. There's been a time when I didn't. There was a time when I, you know, didn't have any religion in my life, didn't go to church or anything of that kind, didn't pray, you know, anything like that, for many, many years, and then I returned to the Catholic Church. I was raised a Catholic, and I've returned to the Catholic Church. And it's important to me today. I read books about my faith. I read books about martyrs, things of this type, in an attempt to strengthen my faith. I pray, not all that often, but I pray. I teach my boys about God. But, you know, so the question here, though, is evolution. Does evolution prove there's not a God? You know, I think that's what that guy was suggesting, I think. And I just think that's false. You know, different people have different beliefs on evolution, and I haven't studied it in enough depth to offer any comments that would, clarify things. But even if evolution is 100% true, if every claim ever made is true, and I don't think that that's established beyond any reasonable doubt, I think most people believe that some of the claims are true. I'm certain that when you combine a black moth with a white moth, you get a peppered moth or whatever it is. I don't think anyone questions those basics. But, you know, if you say, did every species, you know, come from some protozoa somewhere? Some people seem to think that. Others seem to think otherwise. And no, I don't think that's been proven. I think it's a theory. And it's a theory, certainly people should explore it, consider it. But I haven't studied it in depth enough to be able to list the strengths or the weaknesses. But even, grant to say that it was all 100% solid, there was no question about it. That still wouldn't prove there's no God, because obviously the question is, where did that protozoa come from? And who made it who made the protozoa so that somewhere down the road it would generate mutations, which through a process of survival of the fittest, you know, could lead to mankind coming onto Earth. You know, they asked Ben Stein in this documentary, he asked, what's the guy's name? Dawkins? Christopher Dawkins? He's an atheist scientist. And, you know, he's very well known. I think he had a popular book on this subject and, in favor of atheism. And, you know, he asked them, who put the protozoa there? Who put the life there? And Dawkins said, well, you know, maybe a, you know, somebody from another planet, you know, some creature from another planet came and put the protozoa. And I guess that could be so. But at that point, you're talking about things that are so fantastic. I feel, you know, why not just believe in God at that point? You know, is God any harder to swallow than, you know, take the Christian God? And you don't have to take the Christian God. Obviously, you can take whatever God, you know, you choose. But, you know, people find a lot of the elements of the Christian God hard to believe, you know, that God gave us 10 commandments and that God sent his son and his son rose from the dead. They say, hey, that's far-fetched. And, you know, and it is. But is it any more far-fetched than thinking some alien came from Mars and put a protozoa in the water, thinking that it would turn into a fish and then into a turtle and then into a bunny rabbit? You know? So, evolution, it certainly should be explored, but it doesn't disprove God. And I think sensible people acknowledge that. In other words, if you took a poll of all people, I think, you know, it's sort of like I always discuss on passive investing. I say 10% absolutely believe in rational investing. 20% are dogmatic about passive investing. This is in most communities I've been in. 70% are in the middle. They want to hear the arguments for both sides. They're open to different arguments, but they lean towards passive investing because that's what the experts have told them is right. So they lean in that direction. And I think that's true with evolution. I think the argument that I've just made, that many people today believe in God, many intelligent people, people who've gone to school, people who read books, people who are capable of logic, they believe in God. And throughout history, there have been many, many, many smart, smart people who believed in God. Some of the smartest people that have ever walked the face of the earth believed in God. Some of the smartest scientists believed in God. So the idea that somehow science has disproven God, I just don't buy. If people want to say that science tilts things in that direction, I think I could go along with that. Science has caused greater skepticism. That, I think, is a fair statement. But to say science has disproved it. So, again, there is a parallel here to what's going on with passive investing, because you have to ask yourself, well, why are these people so dogmatic? You know, the people in the movie, they were saying, we need to get rid of these professors. If they even mentioned, some of them didn't even endorse intelligent design. What intelligent design says is that when you actually study how we have developed, some of the things we have that have developed are so complex. I don't know a whole lot about intelligent design, but I recall reading an article once where they talked about the human eye. And there's like 150 different functions that all have to work together. I pulled that number out of the air. But there are all sorts of functions that have to work together for the eye to do what it does. And if the eye evolved, all 150 functions would have had to pop into place through mutation at the same instant. Because if only 149 of them popped into existence through mutation, it wouldn't have survived. The mutation would have died out because it wouldn't have offered any benefit to the organism that had the eye. So the scientists who study intelligent design say there had to be a designer somewhere. They don't say the designer is God. Obviously it could be. It's all, you know, again, sort of as evolution caused greater skepticism, intelligent design goes in the other direction. It doesn't prove that there's a God. It could be there's some other force we don't even know about, you know, evolution plus that caused the design. We don't know. But intelligent design pushes things a little bit back in the other direction. It says maybe there's a God. You know, it makes you think, you know, who put those 150 factors? Maybe God just carried out his purposes through evolution. You know, maybe God intended this all to happen, but you know, God didn't create the world literally in 7 days. Maybe he, you know, in God's mind, 7 days is 7 billion years. And to God, you know, a billion years might mean nothing. I mean, God, to me, it might be a blink of an eye to God. We don't know. So God carried out his works through evolution. I'm not saying that's true. I'm saying that's the thought that gets into your head when you start looking at intelligent design. So there's not proof either way. And I think that's similar in the debate between passive investing and rational investing. There is not proof either way. I find the case for rational investing to be very, very strong. I am a strong advocate, and I should say that if I'm going to discuss it. There are other people who find the case for passive investing very strong, and they should say what they believe. And both types of people should meet together and have their discussions, and that 70% in the middle should listen to both and form their own opinions. But what is characteristic, I think, judging by this movie, this documentary by Ben Stein, there are at least some advocates of evolution who are dogmatic, who cannot bear to have another side presented. And they see intelligent design as a threat. I don't see how else you can, what else you conclude from watching that documentary. Similarly, we see that with passive investing. There are people who simply cannot tolerate dissent. And they're all on the passive investing side. I've never seen any of that on the rational investing side. Some people on the rational investing side believe it strongly, some not so strongly, but I've never seen anyone who was intolerant of advocacy of passive investing. But I do see that on the passive investing side. So the question, really, the question that matters is why? And what I think is going on in both debates is, I may have to make up terminology to refer to these things. Some of the things I do in my books is, you know, I make up terms to describe concepts that haven't been discussed elsewhere, and then I define them in the glossary of the book so that people understand what these terms mean when I use them. And this is almost the question where this has not been discussed enough and we don't have terminology, but I think what's going on is two things. There's a question that cannot be settled. In one case, the question is there a God? You know, we cannot answer that in a final sense. Different people have different beliefs, and we all have to answer it for ourselves. Either you believe in God or you don't. And if there's a God, and if having faith in him is important to him, and you die without faith in him, obviously there are potential consequences. And also it affects your whole life, really. If you believe in God, you're going to live your life one way. You're going to follow whatever commandments of that God are. And if you don't believe in God, you're going to live your life a different way. So we have a huge question. It's a question that never can be resolved in a final way. There is no final answer. They could study evolution from now to doomsday, and it will not disprove God. And they could study God from now to doomsday, and it won't disprove evolution. You know, you're never going to prove it in a final sense. So it's a huge question. It's an unresolvable question. And it's a question that we must answer in order to live our day-to-day lives. That's true of evolution and of passive investing. In passive investing, the same thing is true. It's a huge question. Should you change your stock allocation in response to changes in prices? That's a huge question for an investor, because your stock allocation determines your success in the long term. So you need to know the answer to that question. It's an unresolvable question. We have tons of evidence, but of course I say there's tons of evidence on the side of rational investing. The other people say there's tons of evidence on the side of passive investing. It's never going to be resolved in any final sense. And three, you can't invest without choosing one path or the other. Either you believe valuations affect long-term returns and you change your allocation when prices get out of control, or you don't. There is no neutral ground. You know, Dylan had a line in one of the songs from his quote-unquote religious period, where he said, you either got faith or you got unbelief. There ain't no neutral ground. You may be neutral in your mind. You may be undecided. But you've got to choose in order to live. You've got to wake up in the morning and you've got to say, I'm going to live my life assuming there is a God, or I'm going to live my life assuming there isn't a God. And with investing, you've got to say, I'm going to make my decisions assuming that valuations affect long-term returns, or I'm going to make my decision assuming valuations do not affect long-term returns. You've got to choose. And I think that phenomenon, I don't know what to call it, but let's call it a decision that produces angst, let's call it, you know, an angst-producing decision. Well, an angst-producing decision causes fear, great fear. It causes dogmatism. Because you've got to make that choice, and you so much want to be right. You know, if there's a God, you want to choose God. If there's not a God, you don't want to choose God. You don't want to be a fool. You know, if you believe there's a God and there's not a God, you're a fool, really, aren't you? I think that's a lot of what goes on here. The people who believe in science, who believe in evolution, and obviously there are people who believe in God and also believe in science, but those who feel that science trumps God, they feel that it's foolish to believe in God. And they don't want to be fools. Well, the people who believe in passive investing think it is foolish to change your stock allocation. And they don't want to be fools. They believe they're going to hurt themselves by doing that. They really, really believe that. And the problem with it is, it's not a belief based on reason. Because if it was based on reason, it would be something that you could prove it one way or the other. You can't prove it. You know, even if we only have data going back to 1870, and most people use data only going back to 1920 because that's the modern era, and, you know, they feel that it's more relevant. But even if we had 5,000 years of data, you know, would it really prove it? There would be people who believed in passive investing. I don't care if we had 5,000 years of data. It is a matter of faith. Passive investing is something you believe. It's not something you're convinced of. It's something you make an emotional choice to believe in. And to a large extent, I think that's true of rational investing. I obviously think the case for rational investing is stronger on the evidence. But that's because I see the evidence through the eyes of a believer. I believe that valuations affect long-term returns. I start there. And when you start there, everything you see supports that belief. Everything you see, really. I go to threads and I swear I'm reading a different thread than the passive investing dogmatists. The passive investing dogmatists read the same words and they say, wow, more evidence that passive investing works. Everything they see, every development is proof to them that passive investing is the way to go because they started believing in it. And everything I see is evidence the other way. You can always, the human mind is capable of great amounts of rationalization. This is true of all of us. And so what's happening is we're using our intellect to persuade ourselves that we're right. We're not using our intellect to learn. That science is using your intellect to learn, but we're not doing that. We're using our evidence to persuade ourselves. And so I do see a parallel. I do see a parallel. And I think it's interesting to think about it. I hope that adds a perspective on the debate between passive and rational investing that helps you to understand better what's at stake. It's a core belief. And of course, ultimately, the question we have to answer is, well, see, do we have to answer the question, what's right? The inclination is to say we have to figure out who's right. But I'm not sure that's true. I don't think we can figure out who's right. My view is life is for learning. Life is a learning experience. So what we have to do is we have to say what process is right. And John Bogle at one time, you know, during the time when all these battles have been going on for almost 7 years, Bogle at one time came to the bogleheads.org board and he said, why can't we all just get along? And, you know, on the surface, it's a great comment because we all should be able to get along. You know, I've offered with Mel Lindau. I said, I'm going to show up at the bogleheads.org meeting. I said, Mel, the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to walk across the room, say, you know, where's Mel Lindau? I'm going to reach out and shake the man's hand. You know, Mel, I'm glad to meet you in person, man. You know, that's how I think it should be done. Because when Mel Lindau shakes Rob Bennett's hand, all the people who believe in rational investing get the signal. Hey, you know, we can speak our minds now. We don't have to be afraid anymore. We're not going to be attacked anymore. Mel shook his hand. And of course, it goes the other way. If I shake Mel's hand, it's a signal. You know, I don't want to see people attacking Mel in a personal way. Attack his ideas? Yes. You know, do everything you can to attack passive investing. That, you know, passive investing is the enemy of the rational investor. But Mel Lindau is not the enemy. Mel Lindau is a person. That's the difference. So my solution to this is living together in peace. Tolerance. But, you know, we're not there today. We're not there. Now, the other issue that I tied in on this podcast with the thinking that these are both odd, They're sort of politically charged issues that most people don't think of as normally relating to investing. The other one that I brought up here is environmentalism. And, how does environmentalism, how does that relate to investing? I mean, evolution, okay, that was sort of crazy, but, you know, maybe there's some connection. But environmentalism, well, our investing problem today is an environmental, is a problem much akin to our problem with the environment, I believe. There was an article recently by Henry Blodgett. He was a guy who gained fame. He worked for one of the one of the banks or mutual funds or something back in the internet boom, and he was found guilty of something. I don't know the whole story, and I don't really care to know it. But today he writes about investing. I think he's written a book, and I saw an article by him in Atlantic at the Atlantic.com website, and it was a good article. And I put it up at my Today's Passion. I have a link every day to an article, and I linked to the Blodgett article. And he basically argues that humans are built to create bubbles, which of course lead to crashes, which lead to recessions and even depressions. And he went through all the factors that influence the different players. And he basically, he had what I would call deterministic, pessimistic conclusion. I felt his description of the problem was accurate. What I didn't like in the article was I don't fault him for this. This is common, but I'm more optimistic. He had a deterministic, negative, pessimistic conclusion. He basically said there's nothing that can be done. We're doomed. Humans are always going to create bubbles. We're always going to lie to ourselves about how stock investing works. We're always going to suffer horrible financial losses as a result. And I don't think that's true. And the problem is we think it's true. It has been true through much of history. I think the problem is we think of investing as a solo activity. We think of it as the purpose of an investing guide, an article or a book, is to tell the person reading it how to make more money. Now, it's all about self-interest. And I say the investing question is a public policy concern. It does, of course, have this this individual element. It if you learn how to invest effectively, you will make more money. That part is true, and that's important. I don't mean to make light of it. But the truth is, because we are social animals, we are not, entities that go into a room and think grand thoughts by ourselves. We are all social entities. We learn by talking with other people. We should want others to understand investing, not just ourselves, because when others understand it, they will reflect back to us all of our best thoughts. In other words, the investing game is a game in which our positive emotions are at war with our negative emotions. It's love versus hate, love versus fear. I think there was a movie where it was an old film noir movie, I believe, and the guy had on his fingers, or on his knuckles, he had the letters love on one hand and fear on the other. I don't recall the name of the movie. I think it had that actor in it. It was a good actor. Robert Mitchum, I believe. It was something about it had a river in the title or something. There was a bad guy chasing these children down a river. Love and fear. Love and fear. It's a battle. Rational investing is love. Passive slash emotional investing is fear. The idea that valuations don't matter is fearful. The idea that valuations do matter is loving. It's reaching out. It's positive. Passive is hiding. It's negative. Don't know nothing. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. That's how I see it. If that's true, then the answer to not getting involved in the contagion where everyone starts thinking, stocks for the long run, buy and hold, stay the course, you can't time the market. How do we stop those messages from coming to our ears? We stop them by helping our fellow humans become informed about how investing works in the real world. If you're the only one who knows it, they're going to beat you down. Sooner or later, they're going to beat you down. It might not, you know, you might learn your lesson. You might get burned so bad in this crash that you won't forget it for 20 years. But 20 years from now, you'll fall for it again. Or your children will fall for it. The secret to investing is emotional balance. And emotional balance can only be maintained in a community where other people are bucking you up. You know, the example I gave on a recent podcast is we all have a desire to eat too much chocolate cake. And it's hard to resist. We're flawed creatures. But at least when we're fighting that battle, many of us, you know, don't do a very good job of fighting that battle. You know, many of us are not at the right weight, the weight we'd like to be at. But at least we struggle. I think we do a lot better in that department than we do in the investing department. The investing department is a disaster. The state of knowledge is just, it's a pathetic. The problem is the experts, instead of bucking up our courage, instead of saying, hey, you can do better. You can eat more nutritiously. You can do exercise. You can cut back on the chocolate cake. In the investing world, the experts are telling us the opposite. The experts are saying stocks for the long run, buy and hold, stay the course, timing doesn't work. They're sending all the messages that undermine our belief in the realities of stock investing, that valuations always matter. They're undermining us, not helping us. I think sometimes we'd be better without them. I don't think that across the board. I obviously have great respect and affection for a lot of the experts, and they have at it many valuable insights. But they also, many of the big name experts endorse passive investing. There's just no getting around it. And passive investing is a poison. And we need to change this. So instead of thinking about one expert and saying we're going to change that guy, you know, or that woman, we need to think about changing the environment across the board. When we change the environment, the experts will follow. The reason, a lot of the experts, I've talked to a lot of experts over the past 7 years, and what I've learned is a lot of them understand on some level of consciousness, perhaps not totally, I don't think totally, but on some level of consciousness, they understand that passive investing doesn't work. They understand that the efficient market theory has failed. You know, Rob Arnott asked for a show of hands at a recent conference, 200 academic researchers, and he said, how many of you believe in the efficient market theory? And not one raised his or her hand. They know, they read the literature, but they dare not speak it. They dare not say it out loud. They'll be called anti-evolutionist. You know, they'll lose tenure, just like the people did in Ben Stein's movie that supported, or even didn't even support, wrote about, just mentioned intelligent design. Don't mention Shiller. Don't mention historical data. Don't mention the New School Safe Withdrawal Rate studies. You'll get on a list. You'll be on the, you know, the House Committee on Un-American Activities on their list. You'll be put on that list. That's what we've got to stop. And that's not something we do on an individual basis. That it's changing the environment. And of course, this is what we've had to do in changing, you know, changing the real environment. No, the problem, the reason why we have pollution, you know, I went to Ocean City, New Jersey, for my vacation this summer with my boys and my wife. And, you know, the day before we left, some dentist put medical waste into the ocean, dumped it into the ocean. They had to close the entire beach. I don't know, for a day, 2 days. And we were afraid when we got there, you know, we had reservations. We were afraid when we got there, we wouldn't be able to go to the beach. And fortunately, when we got there, we could. But obviously, the people there the day before didn't get to go. I think 2 days, maybe it was closed. Now, why would a guy do something so stupid? He did it because, I presume there's a cost. You know, company comes in and takes the medical waste, and he saves a few bucks by dumping it into the ocean. And he hurts, you know, thousands of people. All these businesses are hurt. The people trying to enjoy the ocean are hurt. Anyone who steps on one of these needles is hurt. You know, he does damage to the environment, but he helps himself. In other words, you know, economists have a word for this. I don't know what the word is, but it's you know, the point is, from an individual standpoint, what he does makes sense. But from a social standpoint, it makes zero sense. So the society has to step in and say, no, you know, Mr. Dentist, you're not going to dump medical waste into the ocean. We're going to impose penalties on those who do this. And of course, there are penalties, and there should be. There need to be. That's what we need in the investing area. All of the people who, you know, promote passive investing, but yet have serious doubts about it in their own minds, would be less inclined to promote it if they knew that when they spoke, others were going to stick up for them. You know, Bill Bernstein said, at the Vanguard Diehards board, we were on a thread. And he said one time, he said, I don't believe in the macro version of the efficient market theory. And that's the one that we're always discussing. He said, I don't believe in it. And I said, the thread just died. The thread died. And I put up a thread the next day and I said, people, did anyone other than me notice that Bill Bernstein, one of the, you know, most respected experts in this community, said that he doesn't believe in the efficient market theory? We've had these threads going on with, you know, hundreds of responses going back and forth. And now we've got an expert we all respect telling us he doesn't believe in it. Did that not impress anyone? But they don't talk about it. Because if you talk about it, you know, you get banned. You get smear campaigns. You get intimidation posts. This is what happens. And if Bill Bernstein pushed the point, it would happen to him. So he mentions it, and then he goes on and talks about something else. But in order to learn, you know, why does Bill Bernstein think that? I'd like to know. I'd like to ask Bill Bernstein, how did you come to this conclusion, Bill? You know, what? How do you know this? Was there a time when you did believe? I know there was a time. You know, it's clear that there was a time when he did believe it. Well, how did you change your mind? What persuaded you? It might persuade me. It might persuade my friends. And I could do this with all the experts I've spoken to. Every one of them has at some point expressed belief in passive investing and at some point expressed skepticism. And we need to explore the skepticism if we're ever going to understand how investing works. But we need to have an environment in which that's possible, and that it doesn't help. There's no one person who benefits from that. No one makes money by telling people the truth about stock investing. All the money is in feeding people's worst emotions. All the money is telling them, oh, stocks for the long run, you know, buy and hold, timing doesn't work. That's where all the money is, playing to those dark emotions. But telling people that passive investing is nonsense, there's not a lot of money to be made. But in the long run, I think there's money to be made. There are a lot of people out there who would like to know the realities of investing. But we need to get over the hump. We need to get to a point where people are willing to do the right thing because we've spread the message that the right thing has to be done. In other words, a lot of people don't throw their trash on the ground today because the point has been made that we need to care about our environment. You know, a lot of people recycle, and it takes a little time, you know, to bring your trash to the recycling bin or the recycling plant or whatever it happens to be in your local community. It takes a little more time to separate the bottles from the paper trash, but people do it. So I don't think Henry Blodgett's right. I don't think it's impossible that we can ever learn how to invest successfully or rationally. It can be done, but we need to work up the community will to get it done. We need to have people speaking for the community as a whole, and then all of us benefit. All investors benefit from knowing how investing works in the real world, and all experts benefit. The experts would love to be talking about this stuff. But right now they're intimidated. They don't dare. I think a lot of them don't even dare to think it. They know that the penalties are so harsh that they don't dare to think it. I'm going to read some words from Robert Shiller's Irrational Exuberance, page 203 of my edition. This is one paragraph And it is so powerful. I may go into the second paragraph just a little bit, but boy, is this is powerful stuff. This if people would read this and take it seriously, it changes the history of investing. Here's Robert Shiller. It is a serious mistake for public figures to acquiesce in the stock market valuations we have seen recently. To remain silent about the implications of such high valuations, and to leave all commentary to the market analysts who specialize in the nearly impossible task of forecasting the market over the short term and who share interest with investment banks or brokerage firms. The valuation of the stock market is an important national, indeed international, issue. All of our plans for the future, as individuals and as a society, hinge on our perceived wealth, and plans can be thrown into disarray if much of that wealth evaporates tomorrow. The tendency for speculative bubbles to grow and then contract can make for very uneven distribution of wealth. It may even cause many of us at times to question the very viability of our capitalist and free market institutions. It is for such reasons that we must be clear on the prospect for such contractions and on what should be our individual and national policy regarding this prospect. Of course, in the current political and economic climate, one incurs a substantial risk of embarrassment if one goes on record saying that stock returns will be low or negative in coming years. We have seen in this book that although the market appears to have substantial long-term forecastability when it is very overpriced, as it appears to be based on recent data, or alternatively, when it is very underpriced, there is always considerable uncertainty about its outlook. But an observer who remains silent about the unjustifiably high values because he or she could be wrong about the outlook is no better than a doctor who, having diagnosed high blood pressure in a patient, says nothing because the patient might be lucky and show no ill effects. The stock crash is an environmental problem. There is no one person who's going to speak out about it, who's going to have the courage to speak out about it. Robert Shiller did it, so I can't say there's none, but there aren't many. The Robert Shillers are few and far between in this world. But there are many, many, many people, both experts and regular, everyday, middle-class investors, who would like to be talking about the realities of how stock investing works. I know this because I've spoken to them. I've spoken to a good number of experts. I've spoken to many more average middle-class investors. Go to PassionSaving.com and read their stories. These people have things to tell us of great value. They are afraid. The people who are polluting our waters, our investing waters, need to be put in their place. They need to be put in their place. They are poisoning our environment, and we all suffer. But there's no money. There's no money in telling the truth about stock investing. Yet, if we tell the truth about stock investing, we are all richer. We are all richer in financial ways, and we are all richer as people. If we address these issues, Shiller is mentioning public policy concerns. This gibberish that we've heard for the last 20 or 30 years about investing causes income inequalities. I'll need to do a separate podcast on that. But that's true. It causes income inequalities. It makes planning impossible. It causes busted retirements. It causes people to be thrown out of their homes. It causes failed businesses. It's time to get serious. It was time to get serious about the environment back in the late 1960s, early 1970s. There's a woman who wrote a book called Silent Spring. And I'm sure there were Henry Blodgetts at the time that said, no one's ever going to care about the environment. Just throw up your hands, give up. I'm not picking on Henry Blodgett. But my point is, these things don't change unless somebody works up the moxie to stand up and say that they need to change. God bless Robert Shiller. Now, let's take what he said seriously and let's move forward. We all will feel better for it. We all will feel better about ourselves. We all will feel better about our fellow community members. We all will be enriched. Our communities will be better, stronger, friendlier communities. Good luck with your investing strategies.